All right, everybody, welcome. Sorry, I've been a couple of weeks. It's just been sort of hectic and lazy at the same time. So today I'm drinking from Brewery X, local here in Orange County, Bottle Snakes Pilsner. So I've been reading this book called Choose Your Enemies Wisely by Patrick Bet-David, who very popular podcast, Valuetainment, real successful businessman, interesting guy. I don't know that I agree with a lot of stuff he says, but yeah, definitely a bright guy. So I'm reading this book, and it kind of got reminded of the book during a business interaction I was having with a vendor kind of for us, a contractor for us that became very, very frustrating. And so the premise of the book, Choose Your Enemies Wisely, is about, you know, sort of finding an enemy, whether a person or idea, for you to strive against, for you to work against in your business. And it struck me, particularly during this interaction over this past week and weekend with this very frustrating situation with a vendor. We were paying a lot of money for their services and it just really wasn't working out. And they weren't bad guys or anything like that. You know, they were very organized, hardworking. It just wasn't, you know, paying for itself. It was a marketing partner and it just wasn't, you know, worth it for me to pay, you know, $20,000 a month to this contractor. And I got really frustrated and mad about it because they were basically trying to convince me that I was wrong and that it was in fact worth it and that they were doing a good job. And ultimately I kind of just had to tell them, like, it's really simple for me, a business owner, to tell, is this marketing endeavor worth it and helping me make more money, or, and hence, am I making personally more money at the end of the month, or am I losing money on it? So for them to try and tell me that I was wrong about my own interpretation of how much money I was making was pretty frustrating. And that got me thinking about this book, Choose Your Enemies Wisely by Patrick Bet-David, and how I've always, in the, you know, now almost 15 years of running Juggernaut, kind of strived against these different institutions or ideas, or in some cases, more specific people, and how that sort of fueled our success for, you know, doing this for 15 years. It's very rare that a company does that. I'm very proud of what we've done. So I wanted to share with you some of the enemies that we've dealt with throughout this time. Before I get to that, after this intro, I'm gonna be talking about the biggest draft mistakes of, you know, the recent last 7-8 years of the NFL draft. And as always, Beers with Chad is brought to you by the Juggernaut AI app, and you can use code BEERS at juggernautai.app to save on your subscription for the smartest program for you. Also, be on the lookout in the next week or two for a very exciting addition to the Juggernaut apps family. I'll just leave it at that. But if you're looking for customized, individualized strength training programs that grow and adapt with you, Juggernaut AI app can do that like nobody else. Like I said, yeah, Brewery X Bottle Snakes today. So cheers to you fine folks. So different Juggernaut enemies throughout the years. I started this company straight out of college in 2009. And, you know, one of my real big inspirations in doing that was Joe DeFranco. And Joe DeFranco had this hardcore warehouse garage gym in a world of shiny corporate SAQ, speed, agility, quickness centers. And for DeFranco out there in New Jersey, it was probably Parisi School here in Orange County, California. I saw these places like Velocity, another place called the Cutting Edge. but some of them had been around since I was a youth athlete, you know, so for at that point, maybe 10 or 15 years. And some of them were big national chains and had, you know, big air conditioned, shiny facilities. But I looked at this and I was like, the training they're doing is bullshit. They don't lift, they just do agility ladders. The coaches don't understand the physical demands of these sports. You know, they're doing conditioning for football players and the drills lasting 30, 40 seconds of, you know, again, quote unquote, agility work for that time. You know, and it just really frustrated me. And so when we created Juggernaut initially as a sport performance gym in Laguna Hills, California, that was my enemy. That was, we are setting out to defeat those type of training businesses and bring people real training, the serious training that they need to succeed. And that combative element, that enemy, seeing them as the enemy mentality, and I realize that in some of these stories I'm gonna come off like a dick, and maybe I am, but that enemy mentality went so far as in our very, very earliest days, in an effort to do some market research, I went to the Velocity in Irvine and gave them a fake name and to try and inquire about some of their higher end services. I don't remember what my fake name was, but I talked to them either, you know, as a shot putter, which I was, or maybe as a college football player wanting to do combine prep type of stuff. It was 15 years ago, so I don't remember exactly. But I had this ruse, and you know, I talked to their top guy, their director there, who coincidentally is a guy named Eric Kasabuki. And I don't know if Eric ever realized this after the fact, or realized who I was after the fact, or remembered this story, but Eric was a very successful USAPL powerlifter, mostly, I think, a single ply competitor. And his wife may have even competed against Marissa in the 52 kilo class of raw lifting. So we definitely crossed paths later after this initial, you know, me going in, telling them I was not Chad Smith, but, you know, Brad Stone or something like that. And I was a college football player wanting to learn more about their training and kind of see what their sales pitch is, see what their pricing structure was, all that sort of stuff. Another story from that earliest time, our first enemy, these fancy speed and agility quickness facilities, SAC places, was this guy, Todd Norman. And Todd Norman, to me, was kind of famous because growing up in Orange County, he trained out at different places and eventually had his own place called The Cutting Edge. And he trained Paul Correa and Tamu Solani from the Ducks and a lot of top high school football players. And he was the one that I remember seeing a video on his website or a commercial or something. He would run commercials during the Orange County High School Football Game of the Week. And they were squatting with chains in it. And at this time, I was big in DeFranco, I was big on Westside. And I see their chains set up, and they were doing it where it's just the whole length of the chain the whole way down. So maybe only like five or six links actually deloading at the bottom. And anyone who knows that's not doing shit. You know, that's not how the chains are supposed to be used. Not that they're the most useful thing out there anyways, but if you're gonna use them, at least use them right. So I see this in a commercial and it just pisses me off. And it's just more of these guys, they don't really know how to train people. You know, we have to do it right. We have to do it better and bring the right stuff to people. So I'm walking into a high school football game, Nate Winkler, my partner I started Juggernaut with, and I were walking into this game and we're walking alongside Todd Norman. And in the smug 22-year-old, arrogant, probably kind of a prick attitude that I had, I said, I was like, "Hey, Todd." And he didn't know me from, you know, anyone. And he looks over and sees me. He's like, "What's up?" And I was like, "If you need any help learning how to set your chains up right, let me know." And he's just kind of looking at me like confused. And he's like, "What? What'd you say?" I was like, "Yeah." I was like, "I saw you don't know how to use the chains right when you're squatting. So if you need someone who actually knows what they're doing, come and ask." And, you know, it kind of just got left at that. And he was like, "What the fuck? Who the fuck is this telling me this?" But that that stuff fueled me very much of we want to defeat those kind of facilities. And Juggernaut's still in business. That velocity closed long ago, and I don't know the last time anyone in Orange County trained with Todd Norman. As we progressed, so those early facilities, that's 2009, 10, 11, when we're running our first gym. In summer of 2012, so from 2010, end of 2010 when I wrote the Juggernaut Method, the first one, wrote, formatted everything myself, and then started competing in powerlifting. I started to learn more about powerlifting, but that whole time I was sponsored by Elite FTS. And raw powerlifting, to understand the scene at the time, raw powerlifting was so small. Powerlifting as a whole was so small. Raw powerlifting was small. Equipped powerlifting was bigger. And the first time I went to Elite FTS would have been fall 2010, so maybe a month or so after I'd done my first powerlifting meet, and I'm the only raw lifter there. And during that training session in knee wraps, I squatted 635 for 10. And I did, my whole workout in the power rack on my own. Everyone else is squatting in suits and the monolifts and groups of five or six. And that was the first time that I really started to understand what the fuck is equipped powerlifting and why on earth does it exist? And it became more galvanized to me that it was silly and pointless. And through conversations that weekend, I came to understand what these guys are talking about for what they do doesn't work very well for what I do. So time goes, 2010, 2011, and I'm writing a lot of articles on there, and I was like the raw powerlifting guy on there. I was probably the only one at the time. And raw was starting to get some traction, and Dan Green, was lifting, and Stan Efferding was lifting, and I was lifting big weights, and raw powerlifting was starting to get some more traction. And I was writing about sports training and some raw powerlifting training, but wasn't necessarily that outspoken in that form about box squats don't work, west side doesn't work for raw lifting. And then in the summer of 2012, there was an instance where I had posted a link to buy Juggernaut shirts through my training log on there. And it had gotten taken down. And so I was like, oh, why? And they're like, oh, you can't post any external links. Okay, whatever, not a huge deal. Fast forward a couple weeks and I see Steve Pulcinella from Iron Sport Gym, who was a popular writer on there as well, post a link to Iron Sport shirts. I was like, okay, well, I guess if Steve can do it, I can do it too. So I posted another link. Day or two later, mine's taken down, Steve's is still up. So at that point, I'm like, what the fuck is this? Why is he getting to share his external link to his shirts and I can't for mine? I'd written, he later wrote the Iron Sport Method, which was never very popular. I had written 30 articles at that point, was lifting the biggest weights, one of the best raw powerlifters in the world, and Juggernaut Method had sold hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of copies, of which Elite FTS was getting 40%. I wrote it, formatted it, every piece of it myself. So at that point, I'm like, what the fuck is this? So I inquire about that and, basically said, why can Steve do it and I can't? He got permission. And I was like, I don't really see the point of this then if like other guys are getting to promote themselves and I can't promote my own business through this because we're not getting paid. Like I was getting free t-shirts and free knee wraps. And, they came back and said, well, if it's not for self-promotion, it's just to help people. And it's like, all right, well, I'm all for helping people. That's why I've written hundreds of articles and made thousands of videos, but we weren't being compensated in any way, directly. I was given a platform, certainly, and I took advantage of that platform effectively by being really strong, writing good articles, writing a good book, And people have since said, oh, the only reason anyone knew you was because you were on Elite FTS. And it's like, no, there's plenty of people on there who the only reason they knew them was because they were on Elite FTS. They knew me because I was squatting 900, breaking the American record, writing a book that people were really interested in, and doing things that were outside the conventional thinking of powerlifting training at that time. So we have a unamicable parting of the ways. And in that, I then was like, well, I need somewhere else to post my training log and my articles and stuff. So let's really get jtsstrength.com going. So I assemble in that Team Juggernaut, which has, you know, had a lot of people come and go since then. But certainly my number one enemy at that point was Elite FTS. It was combating information from them, from Westside, where they were, you know, basically trying to say this works for all powerlifting, but raw powerlifters were reading it, not understanding the caveat of equipment, and because those guys aren't making the caveat of equipment, and as I don't think they understood the differences either. So that became, you know, the enemy, and that helped fuel us from 25,000 website visits in September 2012 to 250,000 in September 2013. You know, and then eventually up, you know, close to 1 million and all the YouTube subscribers and all that stuff. Fighting against what I saw as misinformation, disinformation, whatever you want to say, about how to properly train for raw powerlifting, which by that time was the dominant and became only more dominant form of powerlifting, that fueled me. And anyone who was around me then knew that I fucking hated those guys. And anyone who was around them knows that they fucking hated me too. So then we move on a little bit more, and it stays with that same kind of theme into 2014, 15, 16. These brands that I perceived as doing it wrong, whether they were providing inaccurate information, less than the best information, information from unqualified people, you know, and this, a lot of different people can fit into this. We're pissed at them all the time. We wanted to beat them. We wanted to lift more than them. We wanted to make better information than them and do it what we saw as the right way. And those people all kind of became flash in the pans. They fueled us. We wanted to beat them, beat them, beat them. They were the enemy. Bad information was the enemy. Go on a few more years, more recently. Some people who, you know, tried to copy the same things that I brought you with Juggernaut AI and tried to pass it off as their own and tried to take, you know, things that I had developed and coached them through and pretend as if they did it on their own. They became the enemy. But that was an enemy so easy and simple to defeat that it actually didn't provide very much motivation. You know, it was pretty short-lived motivation to defeat that most recent one. So with that, you know, right now I have a little bit of a new motivation to do a better job in our marketing and that kind of stuff after feeling burned by this partner. And, you know, maybe it's not the most positive way to motivate yourself for business or towards your athletic goals or whatever it is. But for me, it sure as hell been effective. So ask yourself, who is your enemy? What is your enemy? What is it that you are fighting against to strive and achieve what you want to strive and achieve? So this is Beers with Chad. Cheers to you.
Chad.
So I'm listening to Colin Coward today, and he was talking about these rumblings that J.J. McCarthy, quarterback from Michigan, might be the second quarterback drafted in this year's 2024 NFL draft. And I hear that and really just think to myself, that's going to be a mistake. Especially you hear about teams, you know, whether it's taking him at number two or number three, or a team trading up to take him, where 3 months ago he was probably a second or third rounder, and like how these guys get this momentum going. And I'm not studying the film. I'm not purporting to be better at evaluating quarterback talent than NFL general managers and head coaches and people whose job it is to do that and get paid millions of dollars. But I do know that if J.J. McCarthy goes number two, that team will be making a mistake. And that's nothing against J.J. McCarthy. It's just like, through the evaluation process, you can't take a guy that's like marginally sized, he's very thin, you know, with not a ton of experience and not a ton of production. It's like, what is it about him that's making people think, oh, this is possibly the number two or number three pick? And you kind of see it every year. You know, there's some of these prospects who come on late, whether it's because of a big combine or these sort of lesser known guys. And very often it proves to be a mistake for those teams. So I wanted to talk about five of the worst NFL draft decisions of the last 10 years. You're going to notice a theme in a lot of these. It involves trading up and it involves picking a quarterback very high. So number five, the Chicago Bears, number one pick in this year's draft, move up for Mitch Trubisky. And it wasn't that Mitch Trubisky was that bad or a huge bust. They went to the playoffs a couple times with Mitch Trubisky, or that they paid that high of a price to select him. They only moved up one spot, trading from number three to number two with the 49ers. The 49ers also made a bad pick with Solomon Thomas, but they gave 2/3 and a 1/4 to move up one spot to pick Mitch Trubisky. But where Mitch Trubisky looks so bad, and he didn't have a ton of starting experience at University of North Carolina. You know, so it was one of these kind of like late rising, not a huge resume type of picks. It's more about who they could have picked. And who they could have picked is, as you've seen in many ESPN graphics over the years, Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. And yeah, Deshaun Watson is having his issues, but those first couple years of Deshaun Watson, I'm sure the Bears would have preferred him over Mitch Trubisky. And then some of the picks that they traded, their third round picks that they traded away, those became Fred Warner and Alvin Kamara. So yeah, I'm gonna put on the hypothetical draft, well, what if they would have picked the right guy with every pick kind of hat. And if the Bears would have, you know, stayed put and chosen Patrick Mahomes and then Fred Warner and Alvin Kamara, they would be a much, much better football team today. And Mitch Trubisky just happens to be another example in a long line, some of which we're gonna talk about now, of mistakes trading up to draft a quarterback in the draft. So number four, also a trade up, but a different position. It is the Bucks trading up with the Chiefs to select kicker Roberto Aguayo. So in 2016, they traded a 3rd and a 4th to the Chiefs to take a kicker. And it sort of becomes a thing of like, is it really ever worth it to draft a kicker in the 2nd round or the 3rd round, which the 49ers did this past year with Jake Moody and another pick I don't love. It's like, there's so many good kickers that are undrafted, and so drafting one in the 2nd round, a valuable pick, questionable for sure. Was there a chance that another team was going to draft Aguayo in the 2nd round or 3rd round or 4th round? And then putting on top of that they had to trade up for him, definitely a bad situation. Some notable players available when they would have drafted in that 3rd and 4th round, Joe Tooney, all pro, Javon Hargrave, multiple-time Pro Bowler, Justin Simmons, Matthew Judon, Tyreek Hill went in the 5th round that year. Granted, he had a lot of other baggage, but they got Roberto Aguayo instead, so I hope that worked out for him. Number three, and this one pains me a little bit because it's a guy I like, Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold, I've had to gotten to spend some time with, really enjoy him as a person. And so the Jets moved up from number 6 to number 3 by trading the Colts 2 second round draft picks that year and then a second the following year. So the Colts ended up taking Quentin Nelson with the number 6 pick, where they traded back to, and he's been excellent, one of the best guards in the NFL. And Sam, it pains me so much because so much of being successful in the NFL at any position, but particularly at quarterback, is about your situation. Do you have a good coach, a good offensive coordinator, not Adam Gase? Do you have a decent offensive line? You know, do you have good weapons to throw it to, not, you know, Robbie Anderson and Isaiah Crowell being your best wide, your best receiving targets? So Sam, I don't think, was in a situation that he ever had a true chance to be successful in. And outside of the Andrew Lucks and John Elways and, you know, maybe Joe Burrow, it's really, really hard to be in a situation where you don't have a good coach, a good offensive coordinator, good offensive line, or good guys to throw it to and be successful. You know, the quarterback can't catch it after he throws it. But that one does hurt more because they could have picked Josh Allen. They could have picked Lamar Jackson. One of their second round picks that year was, the second round pick that they traded, that ended up being Dallas Goedert, got drafted in that spot. So if their draft would have been Josh Allen and Dallas Goedert, they would have been a lot better off. Number 2, a very recent one, last year, the Carolina Panthers trading up from number 9 to number 1, where they took Bryce Young. Panthers went from 9 to 1 by trading DJ Moore, by far their best wide receiver, 2023 first and second round picks, 2024 first this year, and 2025 second. So this one was really bad for a number of reasons. It was really bad because trading up a bunch of spots rarely works out. See Carson Wentz, see RG3, see all these other ones that I'm talking about. And Bryce Young was not the guy to take number 1 or to trade up for. If they were trading up for maybe Caleb Williams, maybe Trevor Lawrence, maybe Andrew Luck, sure. And that's, you know, yeah, you could say this is hindsight, you know, that I'm playing the results. But last year before Bryce Young was drafted, I knew and they knew that he's really, really small. And it's not a good idea to pick people who are out of the physical norms with the number 1 draft pick. Now, whether that means that they're 5'10", 100, you know, or 5'11", 190 pounds, like Bryce Young, and looks like a Pop Warner player out there with NFL guys, or it means that they're a Brock Osweiler and they're 6'8", and there's not a history of those guys being successful either, don't take a weird risk in that situation. So I wouldn't pick Bryce Young first overall, regardless. CJ Stroud, you know, certainly with hindsight, made that pick look even worse. But you just can't take a guy who's that small. Kyler Murray, same thing. I wouldn't have taken Kyler Murray number 1. They're going to get injured too much, all that stuff. And then the Carolina one becomes so bad because, one, they traded one of their best players away in DJ Moore. And if they just stayed in their spot, and because last year wasn't perceived to be as strong of a quarterback draft as this year is, and that they knew that last year before the draft, what if they would have just stayed in their number 9 spot, picked maybe Jalen Carter, or who ended up going number 9, or an offensive lineman? Then this year, you know, and Jalen Carter, and, you know, he has his own set of issues, but, you know, great player. Jalen Carter last year, he wouldn't have helped the Panthers win another game. They still would have had the worst record in the NFL and had the number 1 draft pick this year, where they could have now drafted Caleb Williams and still had DJ Moore and had Jalen Carter, or a good offensive lineman, to help protect them, and just been in such a better situation overall. So, you know, don't trade up. And then finally, number 1, my favorite team with the number 1 spot in a list that they don't want to have the number 1 spot on, but it's trading up for Trey Lance. So the Niners in the 2021 draft traded up from number 12 to number 3 to draft North Dakota State's kind of unknown, had only started for a year and then played one game showcase thing during COVID. And it was this weird evaluation year. And you see with all the quarterbacks that year, you know, no one really got it right. Even Trevor Lawrence is sort of not everything he'd been cracked up to be. But the Trey Lance one looks really bad because those guys who drafted, you know, they didn't trade up for Zach Wilson. They didn't trade up for Justin Fields. They didn't trade up, well, they did trade up a little bit, but not as much for Mac Jones. All these guys who are on different teams now. But when the Niners went from 12 to 3 by trading their first in 2021, their first in 2022, their second in, or sorry, their third in 2022, and their first in 2023, they gave up an immense amount of draft capital. And because they ended up drafting in 2022, the baby-faced assassin, Brock Purdy, BCB, with the last pick in the draft, a lot of this kind of gets washed over and forgotten about. And, you know, ultimately the goal is to put the best team on the field, and they did that in a bit of a roundabout way. But let's just play for the painful, you know, exercise of it, the what-if game. So another problem with them trading up is by all accounts, they traded up for sort of a question mark. It was more like, let's get to number 3 and then we'll decide who we want to take. And is that Mac Jones? Is that Trey Lance? Is that Justin Fields? When they could have stayed put and drafted Mac Jones. And there's, you know, some people saying that John Lynch wanted Mac Jones, or Kyle wanted Mac Jones, and Lynch wanted Lance, and, you know, but trading up without a definitive target in mind, that's a mistake. And, you know, knowing that if it really was, you know, 6 one way, half dozen the other on Trey Lance and Mac Jones, why not just stay at 12 and get it, or not trade all the way up to 3, because you knew that one of them was going to be there, you know, into at least the late, maybe 8, 9, 10 kind of range, and you could have traded up without giving up nearly as much. And then the other guys they could have picked. So they had the number 12 pick in 2021. They wanted a quarterback because they weren't sure about Jimmy's health and long-term, you know, longevity with his injuries. So they probably wanted a quarterback, but let's say they didn't draft a quarterback in 2021 because they knew that Brock Purdy was there in 2022, just waiting for them. They could have picked Micah Parsons, who went number 12. The defense of Nick Bosa on one side and Micah Parsons on the other side, quarterbacks would just, they would tap out before the game. That would be truly unfair for an offensive line to try and deal with. Or let's say they go with Rashawn Slater, who went 13th overall that year to the Chargers, one pick later. If Rashawn Slater is the 49ers' right tackle in this most recent Super Bowl against the Chiefs, the 49ers win the game. They probably also go to the Super Bowl at least one other time, probably beating the Rams in 2021. Then going forward, so that 2022 first-round pick that they traded, they lost to the Rams in the NFC Championship that year. So they had the 29th pick. Well, the 30th overall pick that year was George Karloftis. So if they go Micah Parsons in 2021, they're probably not going Karloftis in 22. But if they went with Rashawn Slater, maybe they have Karloftis there in 2022. And in 2023, oh, you know, if Brock still gets hurt, yeah, they're not going to beat the Eagles with their fourth or fifth string quarterback, or, you know, a running back playing quarterback. So maybe they stay at that 29th pick for 2023 and pick Sam Laporta, a nice compliment to George Kittle, an aging George Kittle. Now, you know, talking about contract situations with Ayuk and Purdy, you could let Kittle go, you know, this next year as guys need to get paid, and it all works out. But in the meantime, this past year, you would have had, you know, the best two tight end combination in the NFL since Gronk and Aaron Hernandez. So a lot of what ifs, a lot of mistakes. NFL general managers, if you're listening, don't trade up for a quarterback, especially if he's tiny or from a tiny school or hasn't started very much, because it's almost always a mistake. You know, just ask Carson Wentz, Trey Lance, Bryce Young, the list goes on and on. So that was Beers with Chad. Please listen, subscribe. Well, you already listened if you made it this far. Subscribe, review, all that good stuff. Share with a friend. Let me know what you want me to talk about. Cheers to you fine folks.